Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
We're recording now.
Wait. Yeah, I just want this on the record for Steve to ask that question.
Are you a flower guy or?
I love that you said flower. Now we're going to say cannabis and we're going to say flower and it's going to be fucking awesome. I love that. Yes. So I prefer flower, but I realize it has a lot of bullshit that comes along with it, like smelling and smoking and all that other shit. So I will, when I can get away with it, I will use flower, and when I can't, which is probably 75% of the time, I'll use concentrates.
Well, if you haven't figured it out, folks, Whiskey Congress is back in session. We are drinking whiskey. On the phone with us is Michael Wood Jr. out in Arizona, and preferred cannabis consumption is the subject to start with. Now, we're drinking whiskey. We're drinking Booker's whiskey, which has some historical significance with us and Mike, because when you came here in, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I think it was only two years ago.
Okay. A couple years back, Mike was in Cleveland, stopped in for a drink. I opened up my bottle of Booker's because it's one of my favorite whiskeys, and started to hand a glass to Mike, and Steve basically jumped in front of me like I was, you know, like he was a bodyguard because I was giving him 130 proof whiskey, and he's not much of a drinker. Before we got going, Mike informed me that he's more than capable of handling whatever. But
now,
so anyway,
now, to be fair, Mike's wife backed me up on that. She did.
Okay.
I wouldn't back down. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'll drink it. Now, will four of them kill me? Maybe. But I'm going to drink at least 3.5 and hang in there.
Fair. All right. Well, anyway, Mike, good to have you on the show. We're drinking Booker's whiskey. Probably my favorite bourbon. I scored it a 95. We won't go into the whole notes thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's Booker's. It's you know, one of the best, I think, in my opinion. Now, there are some higher end, you know, boutique whiskeys out there that I've only had the opportunity to taste once or twice, but those go for hundreds of dollars,
$250 a bottle, yeah,
or more. So we, you know, for our level of expertise, this is one of the best.
All right, Mike, you've been holding off. What do you got going on out there?
All right, so today from Metro Meds, I have Bruce Banner Flower. Oh. Wrapped in California Dream Twisted Hemp Wraps with some dispersed Venom THC sugar crystals that I don't remember which strand they're from.
Holy God.
Okay. I did not know. I mean, I knew all of those words, but they didn't really mean much to me. Although Steve asking about flower before the...
Yeah, so actually, I went to a cannabis conference in New York, CBDJ or something along those lines, just because my interest in cannabis is growing as it becomes legalized, and as I realize myself that there's plenty of benefits beyond just smoking and getting high. As a former athlete, as a former football player, and a current powerlifter, like I had a ton of issues with inflammation in joints and pain. You know, I played football in college. I definitely had some memory type issues going on that began to worry me. And so I started with just a simple CBD oil, and that helped a lot with inflammation. It helped with sleeping. And then I was able to procure in some manner or fashion a concentrate that I use probably a couple times a week to really help the whole sleep process. Like about a half hour before bed, a couple hits off the pen, and I sleep like a giant baby. It's wonderful.
Well, I was telling Mike before that I'm rethinking my stance on this because I've been drinking way too much, and I was telling him about my weight loss issues, and and Mike was kind enough to point out that there's different ways that marijuana does not help you lose weight. So, when I said it, Mike, sorry.
No, I mean, it's absolutely true. It has its all pros and cons. I think one of the, like, there's two really tough things that we're dealing with when it comes to, well, I guess three. We can have the social scourge, but whatever, that's dying, you know the idea behind it. But also the idea that it is enjoyable and medicine. So there's, like, this idea that medicine can't be enjoyable, which I don't know. That seems kind of silly that we've kind of gotten that way. But we take that, like, you can't have fun in the gym. Like, you know, it's got to be work and it's got to be pain. Like, we have all those kind of ideas all throughout our society. And then the third thing is that we're trying to, like, medicinalize it in a way that it becomes pharmaceutical and, like, isolate the ingredients out of it. But the thing about cannabis is it works. It has turpentines and it has all these other additional elements in it. CBD does not work as well without THC to supplement it.
That's true.
So the plant as a whole works much better as a flower and as a or you can concentrate in its full form. They do that. It's just really expensive right now. And because you need these other benefits, and you might not think that you need the other benefits, but really, I mean, if you're taking something for inflammation and it also makes you a better human being to your neighbor, I don't know why you'd pass that up.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I can speak to it because I've experienced it firsthand. The CBD oil, I was taking the drops under the tongue, and it did work in terms of inflammation. It definitely helped. Like, I noticed that my knees weren't nearly as sore after I would, you know, squat heavy, put, you know, 500-600 pounds on my back. And I did notice that I slept better. And a friend of mine suggested, you know, trying a concentrate with THC in it, because I was sleeping better, but I still wasn't sleeping great. And so he was able to get it for me and I tried it. And, you know, the first time I was a little
too. How much did you do? How many milligrams?
The way my concentrate is, like, it comes in a pre, like, it's a tube that's already, like, I just screw it onto the pen. Okay.
So that's actually not a concentrate.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
you get what I'm saying?
That's vaping.
It's an oil.
Technically
right.
Different. Yeah.
Yes, it is different. I'm sorry. I know the concentrate is when you get the, it's like, it comes like in a crystal form, right?
Yeah, there's and crystal, then, there's crumble, there's butter, there's four or five times, but you do a concentrate in a thing called a nail or you have to smoke it.
Yes, yes. And so I'm not there. But so mine comes, yes, in a vape pen, and I was too aggressive with it, though. I mean, because I'm a cigar smoker, so I'm pulling on it like I would, you know, an LFD or, you know, one of these big, heavy, dark cigars that I smoke. And that was a weird night. That was just
it was nice, though, right? How'd you sleep?
It was
great, right?
Well, I mean, it took me a minute to get from the couch upstairs, and when I say a minute, it took a couple hours.
Because, was it a stepwise process or slow grinding thing?
It was. I literally slid off the couch, and because I was trying to turn the TV off.
Oh, I'm just picturing it.
I was trying to turn the TV off, and I couldn't get it to go off, and I realized I didn't have the remote. I had my cell phone in my hand. And when I finally figured that out, I said, "Wow, the TV can just stay on, right? I love this movie," and it was something odd. I actually don't even want to tell you what it was, and so I'm sitting there and I'm watching it and I'm kind of getting a little bit, like, choked up and emotional, right? Well, I'll tell you what. So it was Steel Magnolias, and and I'm watching and I'm just like, God damn it! Like,
wow.
Like, I need, like, suck it up and just like stop crying, and then. Finally, it goes off and the credits are there, and I get myself to a position where I feel like I can get to the steps, and then there's like another half hour passes, and I'm not sure if I fell asleep or what happened, but a half hour had passed, and finally I got to the steps. That took a while, much longer than it should have, and then I made it to my bed, like, horizontal across the bed, shirt made it off, pants didn't make it off, And I woke up like 8 hours later. I felt just great. Just felt
there's
really
nothing
good.
Like waking up from cannabis. You're like, yes, let's go.
Right. I mean, I woke up like I was, you know, no hangover, no nothing. I woke up suddenly, and like looking like, why am I laying across the bed? Where's my shirt? Why do I have my pants on? But you know what? I felt like 100
bucks.
And
why did she have to die at the end of Steel Magnolias?
Oh my God! Don't get me started there. I'll start crying.
Yeah, it will make you emotional. I mean, I hope you really appreciate it though, because like for the first maybe 2 weeks, you are never, it's never going to be psychologically as good as it is in those first couple of weeks. All your medicinal benefits stay, but the magic of the drug psychologically will fade.
Yes, yes. And I've noticed that even though I like I said, I you know, a couple times a week before bed, I've noticed though it doesn't, it's not, and I'm kind of glad to a degree. Because those first couple times, like, I mean, even the second time, I went half as hard, which was still way too hard. And, you know, I ended up sitting in my, I literally sat on my patio for 3 hours from like 11 until like 4 a.m. But like, I wasn't drinking, no, nothing.
That's 5 hours.
I just, or whatever. I don't know. I couldn't even do the math. I had music playing and I was just sitting back there.
And you've never done mushrooms yet, right?
No. Although I got something weird growing in my backyard, so that could change.
Okay, so whenever you're ready, that's your next step, because it has tons more benefits, especially psychologically.
We're literally listening to a gateway drug conversation going on right now.
No,
right.
We could talk about gateway drugs, because there's no such thing as a gateway drug. It's a nice topic to hit.
Okay, but, well, I was just saying, because you're encouraging like, you don't mushrooms.
Go, I mean, no one goes from like weed to mushrooms, so, all right, let's just do some cocaine.
No, right, it doesn't work that way. We don't do that stuff. Yeah, we stick in our realm of cannabis and mushrooms. That's what it is, and that's where you stick. And that magical feeling you have sitting outside on your porch, like on mushrooms, it could be raining, and you could be sitting out there, and it would, like, every raindrop would feel like magic being sent down from God, and you would appreciate the wonder of nature. And it really, like, those things sound crazy, but when that experience is over, or like the way you cried with Steel Magnolias, I mean, sure, it's not the most masculine thing in the world, but it's like it does something to you that lasts.
Well, I can't argue it.
You know, there's a big fight going on between a couple guys on the Cleveland comedy scene, because one guy posted, "Don't call yourself clean and sober if you still smoke pot," and a bunch of folks went off about that. And I do think, you know, this is literally someone who's getting off heroin saying, you know, "I'm finally kicking that," but he still smokes pot, and someone's giving him shit for it. And it's been a big Facebook back and forth that I stayed out of.
I'm addicted to caffeine. I'm not addicted to cannabis.
Right. And caffeine, I used to be a psychotic caffeine addict. I mean, I quit it one time, and for 2 days, I was the most miserable son of a bitch on the planet. I had no fuse. I was awful to be around.
And there's a chemical, yeah. I mean, there's a chemical relationship to why that is. I mean, caffeine is a very addictive drug. I mean, it has a biological impact on your body when you remove it suddenly. You know, like, you have to wean off of it, and you go into withdrawals when you don't have it.
I went from 10 cups of coffee a day to cold turkey.
My God, Jim, what the fuck?
It was free. It was right by my desk, and I was just I'm wired to run fast. What can I say?
I'm probably a 10 cup a day person.
Oh, wow.
I was there.
So I'm super sensitive to caffeine. So I have maybe throughout the course of the week, maybe 3 to 4 doses of caffeine in different forms, right? Like, I mean, maybe it's probably closer to 3. If there's something really heavy going on, then maybe 4. But I would never sleep. I would never sleep.
And maybe that's why I don't sleep, or I drink enough whiskey to get me to sleep.
Oh, and speaking of sleep, that's another thing real quick. The reason you sleep so well and you wake up like just right suddenly out of it is you don't REM. So the cannabinoids stop you from going into REM sleep. And so you're very unlikely to dream or anything. You'll just lay down and your body will just sink into whatever you're doing. And then you wake up refreshed.
Don't we want REM though?
Yeah, they used to say that all the time. But I think all that REM means is that your sleep is deep and it doesn't have necessarily the benefits that we thought it did. It was just also correlated with being in that deep sleep. So you could get to that stage without the REM, it appears.
I wonder what would happen to me if I did try cannabis. So it's known to most people listening to the show that I've never done it in my life. I'm reconsidering that position.
Well, I think there's different strands, there's different types of cannabis that have
smoke
different
interests.
Yes, definitely flower first.
Mike, do you know the story about Steve and I going to Vegas, and about 10 minutes after we arrived, one of Steve's friends offered me an edible, and he jumped in front of that pretty much like he jumped in front of the Booker's whiskey with
you? I didn't even know where your room was at that point in time.
Right.
So that would have been a really bad idea.
Oh, no, it would have been a terrible idea.
If that would have been like a 20 milligram thing and it was your first one, like he would have been he would have had you slung over his shoulder trying to find your hotel room.
Well, and keep in mind, I was experiencing Vegas for the first time. I didn't think experiencing Vegas for the first time and pot for the first time as an edible was a good idea.
As soon as I diagnosed what was happening, Mike, I immediately said, okay, this ends with me literally having to pick him up and carry him, you know, from the casino floor up to the hotel. And he's only been here 20 minutes. And then the thing, he would have been pissed at me because it would have been like, well, what happened? And I'm like, nothing happened. You passed out. Like, you said a bunch of weird nonsense. You tried to touch a bunch of people inappropriately, and then you passed out.
Okay. That nearly happened with
right. Well, I'm like,
that happened anyway.
With alcohol.
But listen, I know how it goes with alcohol and with just that relax.
Or just Jim.
Right. Well, so just that, I can only imagine how, you know, loving you would be.
Oh, okay. yeah. Well, anyway, that did not happen, but
we'll get you.
You know what? I used to say that I was going to say that if Joe Rogan will have me on his podcast, I'll smoke weed on his podcast for the first time. But
there's much to gain for Joe Rogan.
Exactly. But I was going to say I was about to say that maybe, you know, if I ever do it, you two will be the go to guys.
Let's take a trip out to Arizona. We could just get weird in the desert.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great place to get some mushrooms too. And
so Steve, you should know that today our talking with Mike was preceded by him picking roughly 100 pounds of prickly pears. So Mike, it looked awesome. Go ahead, Mike. It's cool.
No, I mean, I don't know why I got into it, but I was like, man, the prickly pear thing is so cool. It's so Sonoran Desert. You can't get this anywhere else. The Sonoran Desert. And so I looked up how you make the jellies and stuff out of them, and I was like, hey, let's do this. So we got all the stuff. We started picking them and making jelly out of them. You just go up to the cactuses, and we find them in public places, and just pick the little fruits off of them. They're a little pain in the butt. There's a lot of processing because of all the needles and stuff on them. And then you end up making the jelly. It's got to be the best jelly that is in existence. And it's a real delicacy because it's so much processing, but it's all out there free. You just got to put the labor in.
Do you have to add sugar to it, or is it naturally sweet enough?
No. You have to add sugar. You have to with anybody. So doing like jelly and preserves and Jell-O and stuff like that. Right now I'm experimenting with all different kinds of ways of putting it together and trying different ways. Like I put fresh lemon in it, and then ones I put lemon rinds in, and some made with honey. So I'm trying to figure this all out, and I'm just going to make enough for everybody for like Christmases and stuff like that. Cause I think it's really unique to this area.
So we have a jelly basket from Mike. We've got three pretty, you know, macho-ish kind of guys in the room. We've now talked about steel magnolias and making jelly.
No, I'm the kind of masculine that will, watch a gay dude dance. I mean, okay. that's my idea of truly masculine. That's, I always feel I got that from actually Jonathan Davis of Korn, who kind of like did that a lot in Korn's lyrics, kind of like trying to re-envision what is masculine. It's, you know, taking care of your family, opening up to yourself to what you really want, not caring if some fucking punk wants to judge you. Fuck you. I do what I like.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
That's what's really masculine is watching Steel Magnolias crying and saying, yeah, what up?
I
do enjoy the movie. I do.
It is
a legendary movie,
it
right?
Is. It really is.
You know, so I'll get those out to you. I hope everybody, you know, you could do it, and then we could talk about what we tried. I think they're super good, and it was a joke. Like when you said, "What do they taste like?" I said prickly pears, because that's always a joke that I say with things, because that's a big mistake. Then that's how you catch up a cop. If you were, say, you were being processed, and he said he smelled your car and knew there was the smell of cannabis in there, so that's why he was justifying the search of you and then ends up arresting you. So a way to trip him up and beat your court case is to ask him what cannabis smells like. And if you can trick them, they'll say something like, oh, it smells like a skunk and something like that. Then you would say, well, why, how do you know it wasn't a skunk with that? If you can't distinguish the two, then how did you make the call that he's doing something illegal, in which case you wouldn't have probable cause and you kind of embarrass him? Because the correct answer is it smells like cannabis.
Well, I would say it smells like marijuana because I'm a racist.
Yeah, because you're a racist.
All right. Speaking of racism, so Steve, you sent me a link to something from the NRA that was Thomas the Train dressed up in KKK hoods.
With the world basically burning behind him on
the tracks. Yes, with the world burning behind him on the tracks. I forwarded that to Mike.
I don't get it.
Okay, so at first glance, right, I looked at, like, I'm going through, I think I found it on Twitter, of course, right?
Right.
And I was so confused. I'm like, well, maybe the former NRA member can explain this to me. in terms that I can understand.
Meaning
you, because I mean you are a former NRA member.
I am a former NRA member.
And I just, I to a degree, I get what they're trying to say, right? Like the world's too PC, and we should be able to say and do and blah blah blah. And you know, we're getting to a point where you know, either everything's offensive or nothing's offensive. And so to prove their point, here's this thing, this innocuous thing, and we're going to turn it into, you know, the most racist thing ever, but we're not racist, so it doesn't even matter, and so it's cool, right? I that's the only thing I could, that's so, I think that's their reasoning or their explanation behind it.
So, it, first of all, it was on Dana Loesch's show. I don't remember the name of her show, and frankly, I don't care. When you said that to me, I thought this is going to be some crackpot, and it's not going to be like an officially accepted NRA thing. I was wrong. It was from Dana Loesch, who, so there is a Thomas the Train commercial now. So Thomas the Train is going more international, and they even talk about in the commercial. They even call it, I think, the Thomas the Train UN or Thomas the Tank Engine UN thing, and it goes to different cultures and he's meeting things and learning things. And there's even a thing about, you know, reuse, recycle, renew. So it's basically all the things that hardcore right wing idiots hate. Multiculturalism,
globalism,
respecting genders, globalism, and recycling and caring about the environment. So to me, this entire thing is they want their constituents to see Thomas the Train as an evil thing and therefore not to let your kids watch it because they don't want their kids seeing this message of environmental responsibility, gender respect, and multiculturalism and globalism. So they're vilifying it at that level. That group of people is extraordinarily easy to motivate with that kind of rhetoric. And I think the KKK thing was, look at this. This is what they're saying about you. If you watch, if you are, you know, of this mindset, they're painting you as this racist who's burning the world down. That's my take on it.
Michael?
I don't get it.
But to say nothing else, it's nuts. I mean, it's to go after Thomas the Train if you're an NRA show. What the fuck? But I'm 90% convinced that's the mentality behind it.
I mean, I guess, or we're just putting too much thought into it, right?
You know,
yeah. I mean, maybe they're just being assholes. But yeah, right. I mean, I don't know. I kind of see the idea that, like, I see it opposite. Like, we keep talking about diversity in cartoons and movies and stuff these days.
Right.
But when I grew up, I just remember diversity everywhere. Like, it was in all the cartoons. I watched Martin. I watched In Living Color. We watched all these shows and Cosby. I mean, those were just major black shows that were on constantly. But, like, there was tons of diversity in everything. Nobody gave a damn, and it was never even a topic. And then when my daughter was growing, when she was growing up, there were shows like The Backyardigans, was one that I loved. And it was super popular, and they had characters that were like Shaniqua and Daquan and stuff like that. There were all these different diverse characters have been like that. I mean, there are Transformers that are clearly black. Yeah.
Right, and, well, Jazz, you know, yeah, Jazz was black.
It's like,
Panthro and Thundercats was definitely black.
Yeah, right? Okay, then Thundercats is another good one. So it's... When I keep hearing this now, it feels completely fabricated from both sides. From the side that says, oh, we finally have a black movie in Black Panther, which makes no freaking sense at all to me to make that statement. You know, like, this is our first black superhero? That's kind of preposterous.
When that came out, I went through the whole litany of, you know, not only black comic book characters, but the movies that have been made about them, you know, over the last 30 years.
So now we're in this world where, like, the far left thinks that everything is racist, and the far right thinks that everything is racist, but nothing's actually really changed.
You know, I think the far right stance is we're being oppressed. You know, I used to be able to say whatever I wanted, do whatever I wanted, and now I can't, and that's not fair, and I'm being, you know, I used to be able to say nigger to someone in the office and get away with it. Now if I did that, I get fired and I'm being oppressed.
Well, not even that extreme. I think it's just the idea, hey, I used to be able to tell these jokes that were funny and everybody knew that they were jokes. Ha, 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 laugh. And right. Now there are so many people that get offended and HR gets called or I lose my job or I get blasted on Twitter and social media and people come after me. And then, or if I say something on social media that is just clearly a joke, then it gets taken out of hand, and then I lose my job and the whole thing. And to a degree, they're right, right? Like, I mean, the progressive left is hypersensitive to the microaggressions, right? To a point where I believe that it's overkill, right? I mean, it's just like, if you spend enough time on Twitter, just not necessarily even interacting, but just reading the hypersensitivity and the...
Of the right, too.
Right. I mean, on both sides, right? I mean, it's amazing. It's just like, how do you people walk out of your house, right? And then you realize maybe some of them don't.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's...
You just yell, "Mom, bring me a meatloaf from downstairs."
Right. I mean, it's insane, though. And so I guess a lot of the complaints about diversity are so some of the complaints about diversity on the left, I think they're justified when they start to talk about things, you know, black directors, people behind the camera. And, you know, if you look at some of your really popular shows, like, yes, you know, there was Martin, and yes, there, you know, you had the Cosby Show, and those stood out. But I mean, I think if you look at the number of shows that you had on your network television, you know, Monday through Friday, day in and day out, there's Family Matters actually there, so now they're starting to pop in. But I guess the question is, should there have been more? Should there have been more balance? And just even not shows that are primarily about black people, but just more black people within, you know, woven into these different shows, right? Like, one of the shows I can't stand is Friends. And the reason why I hate Friends, you know why I don't like Friends? Because Friends wasn't for me.
Right.
Friends wasn't about, like, wasn't, they weren't marketing to me, which is fine, right? Like, I don't need them to market, but I also, like, you weren't marketing to me, so I'm not going to watch the show.
Sure.
People are like, how could you not watch that? I'm like, name a fucking black character that I would relate to. I didn't relate to Joey or Ross or Sam or whatever. And yes, I would bang Jennifer Aniston, but she's the only one. Like, come on. Like, I'm going to watch a show for Jennifer Aniston in the 90s. I am not.
The most black-leaning character on Friends makes me look like Shaft.
I think that ties into Nike, though, on why that is. I kind of disagree that that's, like, the actual issue. I don't think things changed. Just period. I really don't think. I think it comes to what they're marketing to. I think those shows that are mainly black now are failing because they're appealing not to everyone, as Family Matters did, as Martin did. Those shows and Cosby appealed to the mass audience. Well, whenever you shun part of the audience, you're going to fail.
What shows are failing, though? I guess what are we, like, talking about?
Well, I'm talking about, like, not that it would fail. But if you think about, like, show Scandal has a black lead, that show does.
Yes.
And it appeals to a mass audience. So it has this huge thing because it appeals to a mass audience. It doesn't have to do with anything with being a black lead. But a show, like, there's a bunch of all black shows. I can't even think of their names right now that Shonda Rhimes does. And so I don't watch any of them they're just not even marketed to me. So they barely even hit my radar. So yeah, they're not appealing to the masses. They'll have smaller audiences just because they're not appealing to the masses.
Well, I don't like Scandal. I wouldn't say Scandal is a huge, massive hit, right? And that show, that show came to an end because I think it came to its natural end.
But them two banging isn't forcing diversity down anybody's throat, and nobody felt it that way because it was appealing to everyone in every aspect of it.
So Shonda Rhimes' first show was Grey's Anatomy. Right, which had a black character, had a couple
appeals
black characters,
to everyone.
But it appealed to everyone, and so I think we're actually saying the same thing. The key to television, really is appealing to the largest audience, right?
Any business,
and that's exactly how it ties to Nike, right? The key is appealing to the largest audience possible, and I think I think for black people like myself, right? I mean, that are, you know, pretty, you know, down the middle. On some things and little left, little right, whatever. I think for us, it's, listen, I don't need a show that's 100% all black people, right? Because that's not what, my life isn't all black all the time, right? But I do, if you want me to watch a show, then there's got to be something that appeals to me in some way, shape, or form, or fashion, right? Not the whole show, not all of it, but just when you're writing a show, just, you know, think about me a little bit, right? And I mean, I think that's kind of how everybody feels. And so... if you want to go, transitioning over to Nike, what Nike did, they said, all right, we are going to appeal to the largest group possible, and we're going to exclude a small percentage. But what we're going to do by excluding that group is we're going to increase our market share with other people who are going to fall in line with this campaign. And so what they did was they said, all right, well, we'll take the people that are going to support Kaepernick. We'll take the people who don't care and they just like Nike, right? Like, they don't care about the commercials. They don't care about the marketing. They just like the swoosh. We'll take the rest of the world, right, who really doesn't give a shit about what's going on in the United States, because the United States is only 40% of Nike's total revenue. And then if we lose the Make America Great Again crowd, how big of the market is that really, right? And how much money are we actually losing? And what will we actually gain by the people who look at us and say, oh, wow, you're supporting the cause, you're down for the cause? They will either go out and buy more Nike, right? They'll actually go out and invest in Nike stock, or people who, you know, didn't like us because of whatever reason will now look at us in a different light and jump on board. And they did the math and they said, addition by subtraction, if we lose the MAGA crowd, we'll gain this many other people and we'll be fine. And that's the decision that they made. And it looks like it might have been the right decision based off the way the market has fluctuated over the last month since this happened.
Okay. So to interject my bullshit that I always do.
Stick it in there, Mike.
I am a scholar. My PhD is in business management. I think Nike is hurting themselves incredibly by this. Looking at the stock market, I get your argument, but that's not where I'm going to look. That is a measure, a different measurement than we need to be looking at. Before the launch, Nike's favorability among Americans stood at 69%. Since the ad Monday, that metric dropped to 35%. They're actually losing favorability among millennials, among the left, because we see it for what it is. And what younger people today value more than anything is authenticism. And this reeks of bullshit, manipulation, and the stats are showing that people are seeing through this, and it's really going to hurt them. This is appealing to, this is fighting over the biggest portion of a small piece of pie. It's not to appeal to the biggest chunk of audience. You have to appeal to everyone. You don't want to make any enemies when you're selling fucking shoes. That's really ridiculous. I think they're going to hurt themselves tremendously.
Well, the numbers will show up when they do. I said on Steve and my last show, I've been boycotting Nike since the 90s because of their labor practices, and my opinion on them has not changed. I mean, I find the topic interesting, but I'm not going to start buying their stuff because they did this. Now, based on the demographic Steve was just talking about, I'm basically the demographic they're saying we don't give a shit about. We want the younger people. And, you know, there's two things that I think have changed societally, Mike, kind of going back to the previous topic. When the Cosby Show and Martin and all that was popular, I think it made people see black culture and say, hey, these people are cool. But in the past 30 years, the amount of mostly right-wing radio spinning the message that you as a white person are a victim, you are under attack, this is being taken away from you, you're losing your country, has been getting, it started off with Rush Limbaugh and Gordon Liddy, and it's just grown and grown and grown, and it's a huge market, and it's very effective. I mean, when I talk to my right-wing friends, I know what they're going to say immediately, because I heard it on Breitbart or the Patriot Channel or something. I'm like, okay, I've heard these talking points before. You're just regurgitating them. Now, I'll agree that there's plenty of left-wing talking points to get regurgitated too, and I'm not trying to pit one against the other. But the one major difference is where the Cosby Show in its day was taken as, oh, this is cool, it's different, and maybe some people didn't watch it because they didn't relate. It was, now that same thing would be taken as an attack on white America, which is, it's bullshit, but that is the mentality that's out there.
I mean, yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's what the thing is, like, I'm just saying there is from both sides on the extreme, but they're not really what the people are. These are the extreme people who have voices. This isn't the reality. The reality is let me continue to read this poll that they just did. Real, actual poll. Even among the brand's most loyal group, existing Nike customers, favorability declined from 76% from 91%. Among Democrats, Nike's favorability slid to 65% from 74%. And among African Americans, the rating dipped to 74% from 82%. Like, they're losing the people that...
Who did this poll?
I agree that they made the analysis that they thought that this would happen in a different way, but hearing the voices that actually have a stage is not the voice of America.
Who did the poll?
Let me tell you. Hold on. It's on Investors Business Daily. I got to... Go ahead. Just keep talking.
Yeah, all right. Okay. That is, I mean, a poll that's a strong poll that definitely shows exactly what you're saying, which may or may not be right. I mean, it depends on what the sample size was and who did they poll and you know, was there, you know, I mean, there's a lot that goes into polling. And
I'm not saying it's right. It certainly sheds doubt on whether this is going to be beneficial.
Right. But again, for Nike, though, like Nike's going to look at a poll and say, man, that sucks. I hate that we're losing favorability, but our stock price just hit a record high. So fuck your poll. And I'm not saying that, but it's only been a month. And so we'll see where this is at in a year.
Right.
Right. I mean, like that's really,
everybody forgets in America anyway.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. And that was literally my next point, because if you remember, a year ago, people were throwing Keurigs off of bridges, and they were beating them with bats. And Keurig was the enemy because they dropped Sean Hannity, and how dare they? And America, make America great again. Fuck Keurig. And I promise you, Keurig is still just as big as they were, right? And those people eventually just went through a number of coffee makers and said, you know what?
That was kind of convenient.
You know what I mean? Like, and then they go back, and then they go win, and they went back, and they got another Keurig. They didn't tell anybody. They tucked it away in the corner. They're drinking their pods again and ruining the environment.
Yeah, I hate Keurig because of their environmental irresponsibility, yes.
Okay. Fucking
yeah, I think Earth. I agree. I think you're right. It's probably just a moot point in the end anyway.
Right. I mean, because I mean, a year from now, how many people are going to even remember this was a campaign? Nike will pull it in a few months anyway, right? When they come up with a new campaign, it'll be something for Jordan or it'll be something for LeBron, especially when basketball season hits and all the shit with Kaepernick will go away, right? And then, especially once football season is over, right? And then Kaepernick will be 3 years removed from football. Nike will get everything out of him that they can, and they will move on, and everybody else will move on. And there'll be some hardliners that will cling to the idea that they can't buy Nike because Colin Kaepernick and blah, 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 blah. You'll have those that you lost. But at the end of the day, Nike's still going to be the biggest shoe retailer in the world, shoemaker in the world, whatever you want to call them. And their market share is still growing around the world, right? And that's the thing. Like, yeah, maybe, okay, so they lost, you know, 10% of the United States, but they're still growing everywhere else. And in the end, it does not, I promise you, it does not matter. They will still make money. In a year from now, their stock price will be $93, you know, a share, and they'll still be killing it. And I'm not even that big of a Nike fan because their shoes fit me weird. So,
and they're trash.
I agree.
Quality is trash.
There's no good shoes except for ones that I don't think look good. So
I think Pumas are very well made, but they don't fit anybody's feet in America properly.
None. Right? Like
Colin Kaepernick. I don't think it has as much to do about Colin Kaepernick though. I think the favorability hit actually comes from the slogan,
they tie it directly to people,
because it's bullshit.
Well, it is bullshit. He didn't sacrifice anything because they're paying him everything. Like, it's just like, listen, this, you know who's making a sacrifice is Eric Reed, the dude who's not on the in the campaign, right? Like the dude who knelt with Colin Kaepernick and is getting nothing, right? And is sitting there without a job. Like, that's the one who sacrificed everything, you know?
I think that's exactly why it's seen that way, because if it was honest, it would read, if it means sacrificing everything but your sponsorship contract.
Right.
I mean, listen, it's transparent. I don't think, listen, if it were me, I probably wouldn't have done it. Right. And I don't feel that strongly about Colin Kaepernick. I mean, I get what he's saying, but I think that and my biggest thing with this whole thing is that if you're going to kneel, then go out there and do something to actually impact and affect the change, right? Like, I want to see a receipt. Like, if you're going to kneel,
he put some money out, though. He deserves.
He did, and I've been very upfront about that. Is that he's gone out and he's done different things to the point where I could say, all right, well, that's all right. I'll take it. You know, I mean, if you're going to go out there and you're going to spend time with police, and you're going to spend time with youth, and you're going to put some money into these different neighborhoods, and not just put money, but make sure that money is put to good use, then okay, then fine, I'll allow it. But if you're just going to say, oh, well, the NFL said I can do this play 60 thing, and that counts as some sort of public service, then that's not enough. And then stand up, because you are not worth the controversy. Honestly, like a guy kneeling at a football game and then causing all the conservatives to get pissed off and all the fucking liberals to get pissed off, right? Disrupting my fucking Sunday, right? And I have to deal with it, with the backlash and fucking up my fantasy leagues. You're not worth that fucking time to me, right? So stand the fuck up and figure out another way to affect the change that you want to affect, right? But if you're actually going to go out there and do something, then okay, then we can do this all day. That's my I know it's not the most PC, but I actually don't give a shit. So,
you know, one of my buddies on Facebook, Dave from Philly, who's a friend of the show and a friend of mine, posted that the Bills could use Colin Kaepernick right now. And I got to be honest, Mike, I was dreading a text from you because the Baltimore Ravens stomped the Bills on Sunday. And the only time you ever talk sports with me is when Baltimore beats the shit out of the Bills. And last week was nothing short of humiliating. So I was, like I said, dreading the text from you on that. But
I don't watch the NFL, but I mean, I knew the score happened. It's just like, I mean, that wouldn't shock anybody that the Ravens.
You've talked shit before, and this was the best opportunity you would have had because it was heinous to watch. But so anyway, last week when Steve and I were talking and we mentioned we wanted to talk to you about the situation in Dallas where a white police officer shot and killed a man in his own apartment. And it is one of the weirdest stories.
In this kind of format that we've seen in a mile. So, Mike, you know, you and I had texted a little bit back and forth either yesterday or the day before about this. And the reason why I wanted to talk to you about this is it wasn't whether, you know, the shooting, what it had to do with policing. My question to you is, she was in full uniform but off duty. So the question is she a cop 24/7 no matter what? And or when she punches out, does it stop? So, you know, because there's a lot of people saying, well, I mean, she gave him a command and she's in her full uniform, so he should have just listened. But so I guess that is my question, kind of what are your thoughts on it from, I guess, what are your thoughts on the situation as a whole? And then in terms of timing, whether she was off duty, does that matter? Is that something that even comes up? I mean, is she going to get the benefit of the doubt because she was in her uniform? She gave commands, blah, 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 yada, yada. Mike, go.
So legally, she is a cop the moment she suspects that a crime has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So she can place herself on duty at that moment, and she is placing herself on duty at that moment. So, yeah, at the time of the shooting, she is an officer, regardless of the uniform. The uniform has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
How that's going to make her treat it differently is, yeah, she's going to fall under the fear aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So, and just
is
as
she going to beat it? Oh, fuck. After saying that, yeah.
Yeah, so I
haven't thought about it much, but so I guess so, yeah.
I walked Jim through my thought process legally of how I think this case could go, and it goes in her favor, and the reason why is because they're going to look at her attorneys are going to stress that, what you just said, right? As soon as she has the reasonable, like, she's assuming that someone has broken into her apartment, she turns on the I'm a police officer switch, rightfully so, if that is her apartment. And so the question that they're going to ask, you know, would a reasonable person that is a police officer in that situation where they're in their apartment and they believe that they're being burglarized, would they have taken the same action, right? And so what the only thing that, you know, the prosecutor is going to force is, there were all these different clues that led you, that should have led you to understand that you weren't in your apartment. We've heard about the red doormat, the fact that your key didn't work, and we've heard different stories on whether he opened the door, the key lock, or she, you know, the key or what, like, however she made it in, But the prosecution is going to they're going to focus on she should have known there were enough indicators to know that she wasn't. But they're going to say, well, all that aside, she was tired. She didn't know. And so once she was in that apartment and she believed it was hers, once she thought that she was being burglarized, and she basically made the decision that any police officer in her shoes would make at that point in time in that situation. And I think it'll be hard pressed to find a jury in Texas that's going to convict her. I guarantee you it ends up in a hung jury.
The one thing I think will decide the case, good.
Or she'll walk.
But. Yeah, I think she's going to, I mean, saying that, if she's going to have to walk, I think legally there's no way around it. The idea that you're going to focus on enough clues, that's preposterous. I mean, that's just not true. Being tired is worse than being drunk. So, I mean,
I
that
agree.
Science has been proven out.
I fully agree with you. But, I mean, I think that once you take it down the road, and I mean, once you take it down the road legally, and this, I mean, it's the same thing that we had with Trayvon Martin, right? When you really look at what that case was, it wasn't right and it wasn't fair. But when you look at it legally, in terms of what the prosecution had to work with, what the defense had to work with, and what the jury instructions ended up having to be, like you're as a juror, if you're doing your job based off of what is presented to you, you don't have a lot of options.
And then
I think it's gonna be a not guilty after you know. Just even talking.
I mean, because you may find a person. The only reason I say a hung jury is that there may be someone who just says, fuck that, this is wrong, guilty.
Yeah, she's going to get her job back, too.
Yeah. Well, listen, the woman in Oklahoma got her job back. I mean, she shot that dude in the middle of the street when he was walking away from her. He didn't have a weapon on her, so.
All right. To me, going Matlock on this, there's a lot of details that I think will possibly influence it the other way. If her story has changed, what from he came and opened the door to he was on the other side of the room, I saw a shadowy figure, whatever. If they truly want to prosecute this, which is another question, I mean, I think sometimes there's a bias against prosecuting the police by the district attorneys because they work with them. And I don't think either of you would disagree with that, right? That's pretty much, thank you, Captain Obvious. If they really want to get a conviction in this case, where he physically was, which should be provable by forensics, plays a huge role to me. Am I overstating that?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, maybe.
It depends.
I mean, have to see.
I mean, it depends on where he was. Like, I mean, if he was three feet inside of his apartment, or 15 feet, I don't think that changes anything, right? I mean, like, the question is. If she was standing outside of the apartment, right, where, and if it all happened outside of the apartment, then if it happened outside of the apartment and she dragged his body in the apartment, then okay, now we have something.
Which I think we know that didn't happen.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, if he was anywhere within the apartment, I believe it was dark. Now, the only thing is because they're going for manslaughter, and if it was dark. Right. If it's dark and you can't see, you may be able to make the argument that it was reckless for her to shoot into a dark apartment where she couldn't see where she was shooting, who she was shooting at. Right. I mean, you may be able to make that argument. And if it's manslaughter across the board in most states, and I believe even in Texas, there's the reckless element to it. Right, and if you could prove that aspect and you can focus on it, then you might be able to swing this the right way. But as soon as you're dealing with a police officer, then everything just kind of gets thrown out the window. And the leniency that police officers get and the deference to them, it's pretty substantial. So I, you know, like that may not even work.
I mean, we'll see. One thing I said to Steve talking during the week is. There is no way she takes a guilty plea on a lesser charge.
No.
Why would she?
No. There's no way. And, I mean, there's not a lesser charge. I mean, listen, they're already giving her manslaughter. And listen, if this gets bumped up to murder, I promise you she walks.
Agree.
Unless they can somehow prove that these two were banging and she was a scorned lover or some other shit, and that now all of a sudden you can prove motive, which I'm not saying you can. I know there's rumors out there, but unless there's just something out there that we don't know, which there absolutely could be, if this were to get bumped up to an actual murder charge, then I promise you she'll be a free woman in a year.
And, you know, this is also a funny show of what social media can do, because there was a bunch of shit out there. One of the things that was said on social media was these two knew each other, and there was a picture of her with him, and it turns out the picture was completely fabricated. So
the picture was like Photoshop, or was it just two different people?
I think it was her and someone else, not him, is what the way I understood it. But either way, it was debunked.
Was it even a black guy?
It was a black guy.
Oh, okay.
No, it was me, Steve.
I don't know. Jim, listen, I mean, in this day and age, it doesn't take much. So
true. But, I mean, it shows how effective social media can be in distorting the facts, because people were saying these things, and I guarantee you, a substantial percentage of people who heard, hey, they knew each other, didn't take the next step and look into it and find out, oh, no, that's not true. And truthfully, I'm relying on the internet to know it's not true. So the ability to get good and bad information around the world is a big part of the reason why we've got a lot of the problems we have.
Yeah, I mean, a case like this, I mean, you to a degree, you rely on what's put out by you know, his attorneys. You rely on what's put out by, you know, what comes out from the city of Dallas or whatever, you know, whatever jurisdiction is handling it that they release through the media. And then that's all you can really focus on. Anything anyone else is saying, if it's not an actual affidavit or, a result of a search warrant or something like that, that's actually, then the rest of it is all, it's not even speculation, right? Like, it's like conjecture. It's made up bullshit.
So we talked earlier about the NRA. The NRA had their opinion on this as well. And the NRA's opinion on this was, well, if he had a gun, he could have protected himself.
Ow!
That is the dumbest argument I've heard.
Just don't, Mike, can you weigh in on this, please? And please.
I'll just let him go.
No, how are you going to... Okay, listen. So if you're going to sit there and tell me, the NRA, right, that somehow that him having a gun, right, would have saved... Like, let's just think this through.
Let's rather not.
I don't understand. Like, what did we even say?
How? Like, so you're
going to assassinate the cop? Like, I don't know.
Right, like, so like, what
you're... Is this a real conversation?
Right, they're saying... So what they're calling for is, well, she busts in... And he's got his gun in his underwear, because I think he was like in his boxer shorts. That's the other thing, right? So he's got his gun in his boxer shorts or near him. She busts in and immediately shoots him. And so, like, so he for him to have saved his life, that means he's in his boxer shorts with his gun on him, or it's nearby. She comes through the door. He gets said gun and shoots her. So now he has just killed a police officer in his apartment, and they think that has saved his life?
A white female police officer.
Right. That also just ended his life. It may take longer, but
he could have taped the gun to his back using Christmas tape with only two rounds left and then said, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, after he shot her. Sorry, die hard moment.
Love that movie. But
I don't understand how you're comedians, though.
You've never seen me do comedy.
Oh, Mike.
You just made Steve very happy.
See, because people say it's mean when I do it, right? They say it's mean when I do it.
Mike,
I'll
save it as fuck you both.
I'm just saying. All right.
And by the way, that was moderately funny. And
Jim,
it painted
Jim,
an image
listen,
you also.
We support
I don't want your support.
When you make it big, don't forget about it.
Oh, you're done. I'm done with you both.
I'll watch your Netflix special.
Thank you very much.
I probably won't.
He really won't. He's not lying.
I will. I'll tell you I did.
He wouldn't drive 10 minutes across town to see me. The one time he did, he was an hour fucking late. Kind of like today.
There you go.
That landed. All right. Anyway, the Dallas thing and the NRA saying, you know, the good guy with the gun in this case would have been the black guy shooting a white cop. Funny for the NRA to say that, but
They didn't even stand up for Philando Castillo. Like they
right. Be, they, there's they that. Jeez.
Right.
That's a great point.
Well, you've had... So the funny part about that is, Corleone Noir and Kevin Dixie are two people that basically... I don't know how much Kevin Dixie does with the NRA, but I know we know Corleone Noir is a big NRA person. He's on their NRA TV. He does these specials. And he's obviously a huge Second Amendment advocate and a gun guy, blah, 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 yada, yada. He took a lot of heat from a lot of black gun owners, just like, yo, where the fuck are you at on this? Now, he will point to some Twitter thing that he put out, 6 months to a year after Philando Castile got shot, and where he tells some story about how him and his buddies got pulled over by the police, and so he understands, like, what was going through Philando Castile's head at the time, and that was unfortunate, right? Like, I mean, at no point does he actually stand up for the guy. He just tries to, through a long story about himself, try to say indirectly, like, oh, that kind of sucked, right?
Well,
anyone using logic and common sense, if your whole thing is, hey, we believe that everyone should have a gun, and we believe that everyone should have their CCW. So you have one of your people who goes out and does what you say, and then he still ends up getting his head blown off by a fucking cop, then you got to go out and support your guy. It's a common, it's an easy thread to follow, and yet they didn't. So where are you on this, right? And then for them to come out and say this, right, that, well, if the dude in his underwear would have had a gun on him when the lady cop busted through his door, then he'd still be alive. Like, no, he would probably, one, she probably would have shot him that much quicker, no commands, right? Or he does shoot her, and if he doesn't get shot back in some sort of crossfire sort of thing, then he ends up going to jail and getting the gas chamber, electric chair, however they kill people in Texas these days.
I want to say something else about Corleone Noir. Because Corleone Noir has said many times he will debate anyone. I think he said, anyone, anytime, I'll debate anyone. And Mike Wood Jr., you have offered to debate gun control with Corleone Noir on Twitter and on other social media platforms, I believe. And he has ducked you nonstop. I'm calling him out now.
Was on Rogan first and said
right.
that they all ducked me and won't do a debate. And then Rogan said he would set up a debate, which obviously never happened. And then Noir goes on the same show and says that he'll debate. Like, why that doesn't take place. So, of course, I kept calling them both out. But it's not going to happen. They're bullshitters.
I agree it won't happen. But I'm still going to keep saying it because if people don't say it, it definitely won't happen. You and I have discussed gun control. There's certain... I've never fought your logic. There's things you say I don't particularly like because I'm kind of a gun guy.
I don't care. Just be honest about what it means.
Right.
We all have our opinions. I just want to be honest about it.
There's nothing that you say that isn't wrong, and it makes perfect sense. I just don't fucking agree with it. And I'm not, black guy living in this country, I'm not giving up my gun. I won't. You're not going to convince me to.
But in fairness, he's never said give up your gun. He's just said limit to these things and stop pumping handguns into society like crazy. Mike, and I'm quoting you, at least with you on the show this time.
If you can't kick a lot of shit with a shotgun, then you'll never kick a lot of shit.
Oh, great. Steve and I have had this argument on the show with, if you're talking home defense, a pump shotgun or automatic shotgun is without a doubt the ideal choice.
Mossberg's.
I have that beautiful Benelli semi-auto.
You do?
Oh, sure he does. He's a gun guy, too.
No, I know. I mean, like, but I love that Benelli. That Benelli.
My shotgun that is the home defense one is, it is a work of art.
So,
those Italians, no guns.
let me ask you a serious question. What ammunition do you use for home defense?
You use a shotgun.
No. But what do you put in the shotgun?
Shot. Yeah, okay. Regular buckshot.
Okay, and buckshot. I say double op buck is what I use. I was wondering if you use. I've had.
Yeah,
buck.
You probably should use birdshot, but.
I mean, birdshot at that range is going to be absolutely.
You won't kill somebody with it.
That's a funny story. I saw a guy who got shot with a turkey round when I was in college. Long story short, he ended up in the hospital room next to me, and he took a turkey load, which is one of the hardest
Wait, what the fuck were you doing in the hospital?
I got really sick my junior
year. Oh, okay, so you didn't get shot.
I did not get shot, no. But the story, it was actually kind of a big story.
If you didn't get shot, I really don't care.
Okay, fine. Okay. The guy who got shot was in the room next to me, and it was only separated by a curtain, and the curtain wasn't drawn when I saw him, and he got peppered. Oof. Now, he shot the guy who shot him first. Here's what happened, real quick, weird story. Turkey hunting. A guy is in a bush. He makes a gobble call. Some idiot hears a gobble in a bush and shoots the bush, which means shooting the guy.
Yep.
The guy says, "I'm not a turkey." Guy loads, repumps his shotgun. So the guy who got shot first shoots him back. So well, yeah. I was next to the guy who shot him back.
Were you in West Virginia?
Yeah. Shockingly, this happened in West Virginia.
There you go.
Yes.
And there you go.
So anyway,
as soon as you explain the logic there, you motherfucker, you shot me while hunting.
I'm going to shoot again.
Easy to figure that one out.
That turkey learned English. I'm going to shoot him again. All right. We've been going for about an hour. I'd love to talk to you more. We want to stop for take a little break. We'll maybe get a slightly lighter whiskey out and do a second show.
Okay, dokes. If this is a good time for a break, then we'll do it that way. What do you mean?
All right. Sounds good, man. We'll be right back with you.